So, anybody else going to be bored here in the next 10 minutes? You want some Play-Doh? So our gospel today comes from Matthew chapter 14, or 25, I guess. Chapter 25. For it is as if a man going on a journey summoned his slaves and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away. The one who had received the 5 talents went off at once and traded with them and made 5 more talents. In the same way, the one who had the 2 talents made 2 more talents. But the one who had received the 1 talent went off and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. Then the one who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 more talents, saying, Master, you handed over to me 5 talents. See, I have made 5 more talents. His master said to him, Well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. And the one with the 2 talents also came forward, saying, Master, you handed over to me 2 talents. See, I have made 2 more talents. The master said to him, Well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. Then the one who had received the 1 talent also came forward, saying, Master, I knew that you were a harsh man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you did not scatter seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours. But his master replied, You wicked and lazy slave, you knew, did you, that I reap where I did not sow and gather where I did not scatter? Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and on my return I would have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to the one with the 10 talents. For to all those who have, more will be given, and they will have in abundance. But from those who have nothing, even what they will have will be taken away. As for this worthless slave, throw him out into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Good news! Great news today in this parable. I am reminded that parables can be a very tricky thing. Sometimes there are many layers and many facets of meaning in a parable. Sometimes there are different meanings for different contexts. And so I realized or was reminded or discovered this week a couple of things about this difficult parable today. One of those is that no parable can hold the whole weight of the gospel. No story in this book can hold the whole weight of God's story of salvation. We only get a partial picture each week, which is why we continue to keep coming back and reframing our thoughts and ideas on God. And the other thing that I learned is that if you believe that you know the meaning of the parable, you know you're mistaken, because usually you're going to be wrong. So I'm going to ask us to take a look today. The traditional definition and explanation for this parable talks about talents. So Jesus is encouraging his disciples to use their resources effectively for the gospel's sake. He warns that we better get to it and not be idle while we wait for Jesus' return. So each servant is given talents, and that original meaning of talents is money. It wasn't until about the 13th to the 15th century that the church started saying that those talents meant gifts and abilities. So you see, this landlord entrusts his servants with an abundant amount of talents. And so the first and the second servants use it wisely and make more talents. And the third one buries it, does nothing, operates out of fear, hides his own potential, and does nothing, takes no risk. So we see or hear God, this landowner, He doesn't value playing it safe. Maybe God values taking initiative, going out and risking the resources for the sake of the kingdom. Risk based in trust. Somebody said this week, the greatest risk of all is doing nothing, not to care deeply, to give your heart away and in the process risk everything. That the greatest risk is playing it safe and living cautiously and prudently instead of stepping out in faith. Pastor Gary said this week, it's like throwing spaghetti on a wall and seeing what happens. So I was at a conference one time, and it was a bunch of women, and the women in my small group ended up talking about being a woman in a man's world. In other words, one of the women around the circle was in the industry of technology, which apparently at that time was very much a man's world. And I could attest to that, being a pastor, culture thinks that you should be a man. And so we got to talking about what this looks like, and this woman shared her story of how she got into the business of technology. And she said that she used her gift and her knowledge, and she invested everything that she had, and she developed this business, and it became a multi-million dollar business. And so when I met her, she was on the verge of talking in this small group about how she can use the profits from that business to start a nonprofit agency to help those who needed a leg up, as she called it. She decided to use her gifts, her talents, her ability, and risk something. She said it all started with trust and risk. I found a quote this week from a Spanish cellist named Pablo Casals. He said, "Don't be vain because you happen to have a talent. You are not responsible for that. It was not your own doing. What you do with your talent is what matters." So maybe that's one thing that we can learn from this parable today. But here is my struggle. It's a very unsettling story of ruthless business practices. And there is this cynical view of the rich getting richer and the poor becoming destitute. There's this picture of an absentee landlord who cares only for profit maximization. A landlord who's hard-hearted and ruthless. So I want to talk a little bit more about that talent. That talent, like I said in the original meaning, was about money. And so one talent was 15 years of wages. So that's about $2 million. Now, one talent is a boatload of money. Five talents is a big boatload. I mean, this is a huge amount of money that this landlord is saying, here, I entrust this to you. But now, the original audience of this parable would have understood corrupt landlords, that they earn the money off the back of the laborers. And so modern corruption was very recognizable. So the first two slaves double their investment, which I would guess in that original audience would elicit disgust from those hearers. And so here comes this third servant. He becomes the whistleblower in this corrupt system. I wonder if that might be Jesus. So you have this landowner, this master, that could be the world's system. And so this whistleblower renounces the money grabs and the power plays in the world's system. And the whistleblower is willing to risk it all. We hear at the end of the parable, he's thrown out into the darkness. Now, I can totally see Jesus being that whistleblower. I mean, after all, in Matthew's gospel, at this point, Jesus is on the way to the cross. So maybe that cross is not a substitute or a surrogate to be punished in our place, but rather Jesus goes to the cross as a testimony to just how far God will go to communicate God's love for us and for all the world, because Jesus disrupted the status quo. He came and he proclaimed the kingdom of God, which was healing the sick, feeding the hungry, offering forgiveness, welcoming everyone. And for that, he was crucified. That's how much God wants to love us. And that's also a very hard concept for some people to hear. Now, maybe not in this place, as we come here and we gather each week and are reminded about our loving God, but I'm wondering about when we leave these doors after this hour, and we are in our world and in our community, because I've discovered that our view of God colors what we think of God. What we expect is most often what we see. Our experiences in life are very deeply shaped by our expectations. So I'm often confronted out in our community by people who have been hurt by religion or the church. And so when they hear that I'm a pastor, they equate that with church. Or when they hear that I'm a Christian, they also equate that with church. And so they expect to receive the same hurt from me. And they carry that around. Just as each of us carry a picture of God with us. And our experience of God very rarely strays from that picture. So we see this God of judgment, which seems to be the common view in our culture, outside of the church especially. People are judged for who they are and how we behave. So we have this picture of the third servant, picturing the landowner. And his reaction and motivation demonstrates that picture of judgment. He's terrified by his master, who's harsh and aggressive and exploitative. There's no evidence of this in the story, but this is what he believes to be true, and therefore he lives this way. Now, the trouble with this, I think, is that God then becomes quite fearsome. That's not an image that I really like, that the final word from God is judgment. I want that final word to be a word of love. So what do you think of when you think of God? What images or pictures do you have in your head when you think of God? This week, in asking a bunch of people, I heard lots of different things. I heard loving and kind, like a benevolent grandparent. I heard stern and judgmental. I heard protective, or always on the verge of anger. I heard patient and long-suffering, and I also heard impatient and cruel. So the saying goes, what we see is often what we get. That God, as this enforcer of the rules, were people this week that were hung up on the legalism of religion. Or that God was stern and prone to punishment are people that believed that the bad that has happened in their life is the punishment from God. And then there were people that believed that God to be arbitrary, that God is fickle and unsympathetic and just nowhere around in our lives. Everyone had a story to go with their picture. Everyone had a hurt to share. And oftentimes those old hurts are hard to let go of, to be able to see an image of God as a God of love, a God of grace. Because grace is being surprised and uplifted by those moments of love experienced all around us. How might this become the picture that we share with all of those around us? No matter how you interpret this parable, whether it's we need to use the gifts and the talents we've been given for God's purpose in the world, or whether it's to speak and act against the world's injustice, to be a whistleblower or a truth teller, or whether that's to live and share God's message or this picture of love and grace and be a part of this changing perspective, one thing is clear that we learn from this parable today, that we are a part of the work of God's kingdom here and now. We are part of that love put into action. No matter which way we choose to define or explain this parable or this story, God will go with you. providing you the opportunities to experience and share his grace along the way. And thanks be to God for that.